Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo and I'm happy to be here for our Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System question and answer and case study evaluation call. And the way that we use these calls is that you get to type in whatever questions you have about the course material so far, about particular clients, about approaches to particular condition-specific stuff, about anything at all. And also, if you have any cases that you're working with and you'd like to get some support and help with them, I would love to hear that too. The best way to do that is to let me know, like get on the phone and then just present it and I'll ask you questions back and forth, or fill out our case study review form. It looks like no one filled out the case study review form, so we will just move to having you present them on the fly, so to speak, which is fine. So the way that we would do that is you're either going to type in, you know, a full history. Well, that's going to be tough. I'd rather you be on the phone, but you can type in a little bit of the history of what's going on with the person, and then we'll get to talk about it. So it looks like we have a nice showing tonight. I'm happy to have you all here. And I know that I do have some questions, and I do like to try to take the questions that are typed in advance. That way, if you do type in questions, you know, you don't have to weed through to try to find your questions, as they'll be at the beginning. Occasionally we don't, because someone will say they have to get off early. So it looks like we had a question from Lisa, and she said several times talks of drinking warm water 30 to 15 minutes before eating. I've started implementing this and wondering how much liquid we should drink. So yeah, that's a great question. And I think I've mentioned this in some places, but I usually think about, you know, anywhere from 8 to 16 ounces. It could be more. It just depends on the goal. So if the goal is to just kind of warm the stomach up and get it ready and, you know, satisfy a little bit of hunger that's starting to brew in anticipation of food, then I would say, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 ounces, depending on the weight too. If the person is overweight, they're going to want to do more because their daily quota is going to be higher, and that helps to bring that up. If someone's very thin, you know, 8 ounces is plenty. So I would say anywhere from 8 to 24 ounces. And if, again, if you're really trying to get somebody to lose weight and have a shrunk appetite, maybe up to 32 ounces. Okay. And then if doing cooked vegetables that are blended, like in the healing broth recipe for inflamed colon, are digestive enzymes recommended if assessments show a need? That's a great question. You know, there's a lot of debate over when should we use enzymes? Should we just use enzymes when there's a concentrated source of protein or fat or carb? Or should we use them in general? And again, it depends, but if someone's digestive assessment shows that they have a need, then I would certainly do it with something like that. Generally, what I like to do when we're doing some kind of blended meal and having digestive enzymes with it, I like to open them up and put it in and stir it around, because then it starts to pre-digest. Now, if that it tends to be not appealing to people, if it changes the flavor at all, then of course you can go back to just taking them with. With juices, like raw juices, probably don't need the digestive enzymes. With raw vegetables, you know, a lot of the raw vegetables have cellulase in them. And so cellulose is kind of hard to break down for some people, so that could help. But definitely if they're cooked, because a lot of the enzymes have been destroyed by the heat process, then it's a good idea to take some enzymes, especially if the person is symptomatic, like if you're feeling, and obviously you are if you showed it on the assessment. Favor, hi Favor from the UK. A client of mine is asking on behalf of her mom, who was diagnosed 23 years ago with a skin condition called lichen planus. She's asking if there's a treatment that I could offer to help her. Her mom's symptoms is itching all over the body when she gets angry or stressed out. She's also overweight. She has no family history. My question is, how can I help her? This is a great question, because people are looking for a treatment for a condition. We're looking to restore balance to a person who is displaying signs of a condition. There's a very big difference between that. So the first thing is always why, right? We talked about this a lot in our videos leading up to this. Why? Why does her mom have that condition? what's going on in her skin. Yeah, then maybe there is a genetic component, even though the other family has people don't. Maybe there's a genetic tendency towards it, but maybe there's something going on. Maybe there's some toxicity. Maybe there's some immune dysfunction. And so here's what I would recommend whenever anybody asks you about a particular condition, because that's how we've been trained and brainwashed, I would say, to think is in terms of symptom, diagnosis, cure. Symptom, diagnosis, cure, or symptoms. And that's not really the way it works to help the body. And we know that because we have a failing medical system where people don't actually get well, except when they're deathly ill and they've brought back to life. So here's what I would do. I would be asking a lot of questions. When somebody asks you a question like, what should I do for? You should be going back to them with a whole lot more questions. And if she wants her mom to get help, you can explain to her, look, it's a complex situation. She's overweight, number one, so she's clearly toxic because everybody who's overweight is, because fat cells store toxins. She's clearly got some sort of metabolic, or either she's overeating, she's eating the wrong kinds of, she's either overeating the wrong or the right kinds of foods, but she's clearly either overeating, or she's got some hormonal imbalance that's causing her to be overweight even if she's not overeating. Could be insulin, could be cortisol, it could be any number of things. You don't know enough to say, what can I do to help her? What you do know enough is to say, what can I do to get to the root and ask the right questions so I could determine what might help her. We could say, oh, well, she's got itching and she's got a skin thing. Maybe we should try the herb called Yellow Dock. That's a Band-Aid. Might work, actually, because it actually helps to detox the liver. But it's really up to you to find out why. Why? We always want to find out why. It could be a digestive imbalance, could be a liver imbalance, an immune system imbalance, a deficiency of fatty acids. I mean, there's so many things. Gluten intolerance, dairy intolerance, too much sugar. So I would be working on foundations first. Remember when we gave you the little document that said the steps, I think it was the 7 stages of complex health challenge, solving complex health challenges, and we started with the foundations. We'd start with her foundations, find out which of her foundations are out of balance. And then if her foundations are in balance, or, which I doubt it because she's overweight, something's going wrong there, right? So she's out of balance, where in those, you make suggestions there, and then while those things are happening, because it takes time, you can also look at the digestion. Those are the things that I would start with, especially in a case with skin. Okay, so Janine says, how do I treat, I'm assuming IFA is intrinsic factor antibodies. I eat all organic veggies and meat, no alcohol, and believe gluten-free. So I'm not sure what that means, believe gluten-free and no dairy. Does that mean that you think you're gluten-free, but you're not real careful about it? Because sometimes that can be an issue. You can propagate an autoimmune disease by having even a tiny bit of gluten. The studies showed that like, a hundredth of a piece of bread, that little gluten can cause it. So I would certainly, first of all, make sure that you are 100% because it's so critical in inflammatory. I also drink lemon water in the morning to get bile flow in my liver, no gallbladder. Okay, so you had your gallbladder removed, and I don't know how long ago that was, so hard to say. But there's definitely going to be some fat malabsorption or some gut upset, and apparently there was for a long time for you to be losing your gallbladder. So what do I take for no bicarbonate that's the gallbladder? Okay, so, well, there's not no bicarbonate, so let's just get that straight. So the gallbladder produces bicarbonate in response to the bolus of food coming down into the stomach. The acid triggers the response that tells it to produce. But the gallbladder also produces it. So you have less bicarbonate to neutralize and not none, okay? So there's a couple of things, and there's a whole module on liver and gallbladder where we talk about what to do without a gallbladder. So what I'm going to encourage you to do is to read through that, because I don't want to just like go off on a tangent and start doing Band-Aid treatment. I would say go through that module on liver gallbladder. It's probably around 15 or so. It's all of them are open to you. Okay. And then look at that and see what you're doing and what you're not. I would also be looking at like intrinsic factor antibodies. What's your fatty acids looking like? Do you have a leaky gut? So in any time we have antibodies to anything, whether it's collagen, intrinsic factor, thyroid, whatever, they have to be treated, and there's a similar fashion. Not treated, it's balanced. You want to balance the immune system. And usually in the case of any kind of autoimmunity, you're going to have a leaky gut, probably a genetic tendency, and so it hits your weak link, and then some sort of other stress, whether that stress be a mental, emotional stress seriously, or it might be heavy metal overgrowth or heavy metal accumulation, overaccumulation. It could be an infection somewhere. So you've got to go down to basics of how do we work at restoring balance when there's an autoimmune condition. And also, do I deny meningitis on EGD? I do get some tenderness and swelling about an inch next to my belly button and slightly above. So I would love it if you would get on the call and raise your hand, because some of this I'm not clear about, and I don't want to make assumptions and assume that, you know, I know what you're talking about. But all of those things, so I'd be looking, yeah, you're doing great. Congratulations on being on no alcohol and gluten-free. Now you got to heal it. Have you ever done a leaky gut protocol after you went off gluten? How long have you been off gluten? Like if you've only been off gluten a few months, the antibodies aren't just going to go away that quickly. It could take 6 months to a year. And if you've been gluten-free for a long time, the question I would ask is, have you done a leaky gut protocol? Oh, so Daniela, hi. She's 29-year-old son, been on 60 milligrams of Dexilant for GERD since last winter. Been on antipsychotic drugs at the time as well. For a few months, he caused himself mania and psychotic break from smoking too much pot and taking ecstasy. He smoked a lot of cigarettes, ate a ton of sugar. Thankfully, he's been able to get off the psychotic drugs. That's good. He's now on a low dose of Lyrica. He now exhibits sharp and stinging pains in all parts of the large intestine, much gas and feeling of not completely evacuating. A sore area on the left part of his chest that feels connected to his heart sometimes feels like the pain of a heart attack. Okay, I have tried to explain to him that he's much more likely to have low stomach acid. Advised him to take ACV in the morning and take some Manuka honey before bed, as well as a high-potency probiotic. He did that for a short time, felt he was it did not benefit, and dropped that regime. I don't know how consistent he was. He also complained that the probiotic made him gassy. So there's a number of things. He said he also had intestinal dysbiosis for years, causing low neurotransmitters, and he was self-medicating to compensate for that as well as the PTSD. So this is a complicated case, Daniela, but every case needs to go back to the basics. You know, you picked a couple of protocols to give him to help him, and if you're trying to get his stomach acid up, it could be that, you know, taking apple cider vinegar wasn't the right approach, that it might have aggravated or irritated. And then the honey, if he's got a candida, a dysbiosis overgrowth, then taking honey at bedtime is going to cause his insulin levels to go up as well as feed his candida if he has it or overgrowth. So I would just go through the beginning, like what can you do that can get him help? I mean, typically if I see somebody with low stomach acid, first thing I want to do if they're having burning pains is to heal the damaged mucosa, because the burning pain is coming from usually acid in the wrong place. So he's got some damaged mucosa, and when you start adding things that are acidic or that make him produce more acid right away without healing that, you get into trouble. So I would be going back to all the stuff we have in that module on the upper GI protocols and all the background on it. And I would be looking at perhaps helping him to heal, perhaps some diglycerate and licorice, some slippery elm, some plantain, some of the demulcent type things. I would be looking at his diet, and I know you don't have any control over it being he's 29, but he may know or believe that the medication is going to help, and he'll just take the medication because it's easier than lifestyle. And family is the hardest to work with. So giving him something to read about it so he understands, and giving him something that's going to actually give him some relief. And I would say, you know, perhaps the apple cider vinegar was too strong, and you want to go with the GGL, you want to go with slippery elm, and that sort of stuff. Okay. And if the fact that the probiotics caused him to be gassy could be that he has taken the wrong kind of probiotics for him. So the probiotics could be creating a dis-ease or not dysbiosis, but if you're going to create a war in his gut. So if he's got overgrowth of stuff that shouldn't be there and you start introducing gut bugs, that can cause some distress. So I would be asking, how long did the gassiness last for? Was it every time he took it? For how long? Was it just a few days? Was it several weeks? That makes a difference, because just a few days might be getting used to it and you just have to back off the dose. It's really a good idea when you're using probiotics is to start small. And anytime you're trying to change the ecology of a certain area, you just start small by introducing new stuff. The other thing is people who get gassy from probiotics sometimes have a problem with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And the probiotics you're feeding will kind of get stuck in the small intestine instead of making their way to the large intestine where they belong. So that's something, and that we have a whole thing on that, so a whole module on that. So one last thing I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So you could try probiotics, but you can try and see if he has the same response if he does just bifidus or if he does what's called D-lactic acid-free probiotics. And Custom Probiotics has those. I think Claire Labs might, but they don't have the organisms that actually produce a lot of the lactic acid, which causes the bloat. So if you want to get on the phone, for sure, I can have a conversation with you. I don't know if you're on. All right, I'm going to check this chat. Oh, somebody goofed again. We have to make sure that Jazzy knows that whenever she sets up an instant teleseminar event, she has to check to make sure that the slides from the previous one aren't still up. So yeah, there are no slides. If you've seen slides, phosphorus slides, if you hurried up and quickly downloaded them, you got some free slides. That's from our NEPT class, and I'm just going to go ahead and remove that. Yeah. Okay, done. So, yeah, that was one of our micronutrient modules that we did. Oops, in our NEPT program. That was one of, 25 or 30 ones that we made. Okay, so those were the questions typed in. I don't see anything else typed in the chat. So let's see. Okay, so if you have any questions, comments, concerns, people that you'd like help with, go ahead and raise your hand with a star 2. Or you can type it into the chat, or you can type it into the Q&A. Oh, okay, good. We got a couple of them. I just refreshed. Oh, cool. All right. So, Charlotte, I was listening to a talk the other day about metabolism, blood sugar, and the person recommended eating an apple at the end of your meal that contains protein, fat, carbohydrates. I was under the impression that eating fruit with meat.
Got a couple of them. I just refreshed.
Somebody's line is open.
Oh,
cool. How did her line get open? I'm going to put this on lecture so you cannot. Okay, good. All right, let me go back there. I was under the impression that eating fruit with meat would cause fermentation or putrefaction. I was also taught food combining is not great in the combination of meat and starches. That it's better to eat separately with veggies. Can you give me an insight? Yeah, I totally disagree with eating an apple at the end of a meal. I totally disagree for the reasons you said. You're totally right. And also, some people can't eat an apple because it makes their sugar go up. I don't actually see what was the point. Yeah, I agree with you, Charlotte. I wouldn't agree with that comment. Wendy, if your food sensitivity test is negative for gluten and you don't have any side effects or discomforts when it's eating, should you still go gluten-free? This is a good question. First of all, the food sensitivity tests are often not accurate because they're only testing IgG for gliadin. So that's number one. And there are at least 20 different tests, 20 different fractions of the gluten that need to be tested for. The most common one is gliadin. It doesn't mean anything. Secondly, if somebody's been off of gluten for a while and they do a blood test, that test isn't going to be accurate because they haven't been exposed recently. So what I recommend is that if you're going to do testing, the testing that you do would be a Cyrex Labs gluten panel, which is Array 3, or you would do Entera Labs, which has a stool test, and that measures the IgA. So those don't even actually go away. They're still there and ready and waiting, so you can measure them. They're not active, but, you know, once they see gluten, they activate, and it activates the whole inflammatory cascade. And so a lot of people also don't have effects or discomfort when eating gluten, but they just have this general not feeling good, right? They may be suffering from any kind of health issues. So here's what I would say. If a person feels great all the time, has great energy, has no issues, their digestion is fine, and no headaches, you know, none of that stuff, and they've done a food sensitivity test for gluten, and it comes out negative, and they've tested the gluten, and they've eaten a bunch of it for a while, then likely they don't have a problem. Not everybody does. But if they have any health challenges at all, then I would say, yes, they need to go gluten-free, because I wouldn't trust the test. I think there's a lot of false negatives. The other issue is gluten actually does damage the microvilli. It's been shown gluten causes a temporary leaky gut whenever it's eaten. Now, if somebody's in good health and they only eat a little bit, they don't overtax their body, that hyperpermeability can be corrected. But at some point, that goes over the edge. Now, here's the thing. Gluten symptoms are not just gut-related. In fact, the gut is often the last to be affected. A lot of people have depression, anxiety, attention issues, okay? A lot of different stuff coming in the brain. They might have skin issues. They may have lung issues. There's a lot of things in a lot of places where the gluten can have a problem. They may have symptoms of thyroid. Okay, they may have an autoimmune. So it depends on the person. If the person is in perfect health, feels perfectly great all the time, has had a sensitivity test and it shows up negative, and then they go eat it and they don't feel any worse, then I guess it's fine for them to not get rid of gluten. Lana, what are your thoughts of taking high-dose glutamine or colostrum for leaky gut? Would there be any benefit to taking both at the same time? Good question. Well, they both work on a different level. Glutamine is an amino acid that helps to actually repair the cells of the lining of the gut. And then colostrum actually provides some of the immunoglobulins from breast milk before the full milk kicks in. So it's basically colostrum from a cow. First of all, if anybody is going to use colostrum, you need to make sure that it's from organically raised cows. Or better yet, goats or sheep. So that's number one. High dose, it depends. Everybody's different. We can't just a blanket say we're going to use high dose anything for anything, right? So would people benefit from taking both at the same time? Sure, because they work on different mechanisms. The downside of L-glutamine, taking large doses, is number one, glutamine can be a precursor to GABA, or it can be a precursor to glutamate. And if a person has some impairments in the GAD enzyme, glutamic acid decarboxylase, then they don't convert it and it can cause an excitatory response. And I've had people who have taken glutamine even in small doses and gotten very agitated and irritable and sometimes very anxious from it. So like anything else, you go slowly, you check with people. I always get things in powder whenever I can, because then I can start with very tiny doses and work my way up and make sure that they don't have a bad problem. There's a bunch of other things that we talk about in the leaky gut module that will tell you more about some of my protocols for healing leaky gut. So Lori, my husband was just diagnosed with diabetes A1C, hemoglobin A1C is 6.8. Super lean, 7% body fat, extremely disciplined with eating, low carb, moderate to high fat, commutes on a bike to work 65 miles one way and works out almost every day as well, including strength training. Mother was type 1. We just cannot get his sugar to balance. Always lower in the morning. We suspect low insulin. Yeah, he's been under a lot of stress over the last year. plan to take his testosterone, DHA, cortisol, TSH. He's always had gut issues. He'll be my first patient to go through GRAND. We'll definitely take him through the gut issues if he's always had them. But if the chances are he has something called LADA, latent adult onset diabetes, latent autoimmune diabetes of adult origin. And so what you need to do is start with testing his insulin. So you have them test his fasting insulin. That's not going to give you much. But if his fasting insulin is high, then you don't have to do the second test. If his fasting insulin is high, we're talking insulin-resistant classic type 2 diabetes. But if his insulin is low, like, you know, 3 or under, it could be perfectly normal. It could be problems. So then you have to test his insulin 45 minutes after eating. So you have him eat a fairly, you know, whatever his highest carbohydrate meal that he would ever eat is, you know, maybe it's carrots, maybe it's, you know, broccoli stems, you know, something like that. But whatever the highest carbohydrate meal he would typically eat is, you have him eat that. And you measure the insulin at 45 minutes. A couple of ways to test insulin. You send him back to the doctor and you get it done. Another way is you go to Direct Labs, you order an insulin test, and you just show up, have him show up 45 minutes after he's eaten. And the third way is there is a lab that has little kits. I don't have that off the top of my head, but it's in the, oh, it's in our blood sugar balancing program. But if you look, I think ZRT Labs, that's it. ZRT Labs has a finger prick, but you can't get it right away. You have to prick the finger, put it on a card, and send it in, but it makes you not have to go to actually draw the blood at the lab. So that's what I would do. Now, if that comes back that his insulin after 45 minutes is still that low, and he's had some carbs with the meal, then I would be concerned that he has latent adult onset. So what I would be doing is running antibody tests for insulin, antibody tests for the islet cells. There's also the GAD enzyme, glutamic acid decarboxylase, and then C-peptide. Those are all going to give you an idea of whether his pancreas is being attacked, or if he has an autoimmune, or if he has more likely to be having a type 1. I have worked with folks with this situation. They've been misdiagnosed for many years. Some of them on medications weren't getting better, were getting worse. We cleaned up their diet, cleaned up their gut. We got them on a low glycemic diet. Be careful of what fat. You said moderate to high fat. Just be careful of what kind of fats, that they're not processed, heated, oxidized fats, because that could be damaging. And good luck. Oh, and assuming if you haven't already been through our insulin resistance program, I would definitely get in that. Absolutely, definitely get in that. And as a CMDS attendee, you would get a discount if you go to insulinresistancepractitioner.com, and then just write to us at help desk, and we'll make sure to get you that CMDS discount. So, okay, that's it for the questions. Let's see if we have any on the chat. Lynn put up a link for custom probiotics, the D-lactic acid free, and then she put up a link for the Cyrex test and then the Cyrex, the Antero Labs stool test. So thank you, Lynn. All right, let's go to conference. Any questions? Are you guys afraid of me? Start too. I'd like to hear your voices. We're only at a half an hour. Are we going to be done in a half an hour? How's everything going? Anybody want to share? How's your learning going? What modules are you on? Okay, so I want you to, let me think. I'm just going to, let me talk about something. Lynn, give me an idea. What should I talk about? I don't want to leave you down. No other questions? Let me do a Q&A again. Here we go. I hear one. Charlotte says, I hear people do better with more fat and others need less. For example, Vata's in Ayurvedic. My question is, are there signs and symptoms to look for? Test yourself to see if you do better with more fat or less fat if you're not doing labs. Yeah, if you're not doing labs, the other thing is, we're always the best experimental ground. So you basically test it out. You go on a lower carb, higher fat diet, assuming it's all good fat. You know, you don't want to be doing Crisco and those bottles, those horrible bottles of so-called cold pressed oils at the store. You know, those are rancid. They've been exposed to heat, light, and air, and they're really not low process, low temperature process. But you know, if you've got some good olive oil or coconut oil or something like that, test it out. Nuts and seeds and avocados and things like that, whole food fats. And so you test them that way, and you basically eat, and then you do one way and then another, and you see how you feel. You can certainly fill out the dosha questionnaires in Ayurveda, so Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and see where you fall. But yeah, we just see how you do. If you get gassy or bloated or anything like that, feel more energetic, less energetic. Yeah. I don't see anybody else. Wendy, how do you get a Cyrex account if you're not an MD? Well, you can get it if you're a DC or a naturopath or I think an acupuncturist as well. They don't let anybody do the, yeah. So we've tried to work with them for our NEPT folks to get sub accounts because a lot of the other labs do that. And they let me get the account and then the sub accounts for the students, and they haven't. But what you can do, if you go from your INE or your CMDS area on the website and you click over to the grand side, which is on our INE side or our VLM side, you should have a thing sitting there that says lab testing, and it has a link to a page that we have those tests set up. So you can always order them through us if you're in a program. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's challenging, you know, the rules and regulations. Drina, I've used bitters with success with gas and bloating, but when adding fermented foods, even slowly, it causes gas and bloating. Okay, I'm not sure exactly what the question is. So are you saying that when you add fermented foods, even slowly, I don't see a question, so I'm not exactly sure. So if you could clarify for me, that would be awesome. Okay, let's see if there's any questions here. I'm going to go back to the chat. Charlotte, yeah, could the stool have any signs if you're, yeah, so if you look at, you know what a good way to know is if you look at the liver gallbladder part of the assessment for the digestion, you'll see, so clay-colored stools, greasy stools, stools that float more, those can all be signs of fat malabsorption. Okay, let's see. Lana, I'm taking antimicrobial and antifungal herbs and probiotics. Is it okay to take them at the same time or stagger? I wouldn't take probiotics with any antimicrobial and antifungal. So you can take the antimicrobial and antifungal together, but the probiotics you want to take separately, because even though most of the herbals don't necessarily kill off the organisms that are in the probiotics, it's really a probability that they can. So I would just keep them separately by about 4 hours. Okay. Let's see anything more in the chat? Yeah, so Lynn is saying fat malabsorption signs are frequent loose stools, indigestion, cramps, gas, foul-smelling fatty stools, and weight loss. Claudia says Dr. Ellen Christensen has a blog post on olive oil. Hard to tell 100%. Well, nothing's 100%, right? We go by symptoms. We verify with labs. You can do a stool test, and the stool test will tell you if there's fecal fat. So that's one thing that's a possibility for telling. But if you don't want to do labs, if you just want to go by symptoms, it's symptoms and this, you know. Yep. And it's the clay color stools. If it's really severe, the stools are not going to look brown or green. They're going to look kind of that tan, very light tan, and that's a sign of fat malabsorption. It's called steatorrhea. All right, I don't see any hands. Nobody wants to talk to me tonight? Wow, somebody talked to me. Maybe it's not working. Maybe I should open somebody's lines. Salt Lake City, there's Mary. Hi, Mary. You just opened up your line, but That must be Mary. No, who opened up their line? Oh, Mary is the only one that I know who would be able to open up her line. There she is. Again, your line just opened up. You guys are quiet. No digestion questions. Right? Well, I guess we'll call it a night. There we go, Maria. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
I feel like I got to talk to you since you're like begging for something.
I know. It's like I should just take it and end our call a little early, but yeah, I'm here. Pick my brain. I'm here.
Hey, you should be thankful for the break, you know.
I should, because I have a lot to do for Shine.
Right. I know, but you know what? You made me think about, not sure if you remember the case I was talking about my client that has a lot of belching and
Yeah. Kind
of get to do that. Remember?
Yeah.
Now, she does a lot, and, you know, it happens a lot after her smoothies, which is all raw food. I was wondering if maybe this enzyme, you know, I know I'm going to get I'm going to get her digestive assessment tomorrow, but it could be something related to the enzymes potentially.
Yeah, you know, everything is, so here's the thing. What we try to do is not find the symptom that goes with the dysfunction, right? What we're trying to
do is
look at what are all the imbalances, because sometimes, like, it all comes together, and then we don't really know what exactly when it was, but we look and go, oh, look at all these imbalances. Let's just fix whatever imbalances or help them to, you know, rebalance whatever imbalances are out there. So, yeah, it could be, you know, so many things can cause the belching. It's clearly something's not going on, from as simple as, like, we talked about swallowing air when she, chews, and it could be stomach acid, which some of the other symptoms that you told me about led me to think stomach acid, but certainly digestive enzymes is huge. And, you know, we can always start with the basics. If we look at a person's diet and they currently have a good diet, but before that they had a really bad diet, the chances are that their pancreas is kind of a little worn out, especially if they're older, and they've had blood sugar imbalances on top of it, and that it's not producing up to speed. So it can't hurt necessarily to take digestive enzymes. The time it can hurt to take digestive enzymes that have protease in is if somebody has an active gastritis. Usually not if it's reflux in the esophagus, because the capsules don't open. I wouldn't take a powdered protease if the person has esophagitis, but if they have esophagitis, you can still take a protease enzyme. But if they have gastric irritation, so if somebody says to you, hey, I took this enzyme and my stomach just started burning real bad, you know that that's where it is. You know it's in the stomach, because the stomach should have the mucus protection to be able to protect, to keep it that from hurting. But if that mucus lining is destroyed, then anything with protease is going to hurt, because protease breaks down protein. And once that protease gets into the stomach, it can start to eat away at that lining.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you as far as the going through the basics, and I'm not going to try to bypass that, but I'm just kind of thinking, you know, of all the things that could be, and I hadn't thought about it. And, yeah, she has beaten up her system of sugar for a long time.
Yeah.
And her mom died of pancreatic cancer. And I don't...
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if genetically she has not done or agreed to do a genetic testing, and was avoiding the blood sugar, you know, the glucose meter for the longest time because she feared. So she finally come through on that. But do you think that could be something from, you know, either her mom? Obviously, the whole family has diabetes. She's the best one. Actually, she doesn't have that.
Oh, absolutely. That's their weak link. It sounds like the pancreas is the weak link. Yeah. So definitely.
From the enzyme production, that's what I mean,
Yeah, and it could be part of it. Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, you know, your basics would be get her, if she can tolerate bitters, get her to do bitters to see if she can pull it up. If she gets aggravated by bitters, then that indicates that there's probably some kind of gastritis going on, that, or esophagitis there. but you really, you just go through the pieces, right? And we want to provide relief. So, you know, getting people chewing, breathing, appreciating off the sugar, off the pieces, the foods that hurt, onto some of the foods that heal, and then enzymes, probiotics, the basics. But it's when those basics don't necessarily work. The basics work for a lot of people. Right? But a lot of times there's those cases where it's just not working and you're flabbergasted if you don't understand how all this works together.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
See, I gave you something to talk about.
You gave me something to talk about. I like to talk. Thank you.
Now you can go to sleep.
Or go work. Go to work after this. Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, so let me put your hand down, and then I'm going to go back, and it looks like we have a couple of other questions here. Drina came back with, I guess your question was, what are your suggestions for implementing fermented foods without experiencing gas and bloating? So, you know, oftentimes it's just starting with that half a teaspoon, getting it used to it, one teaspoon. And if that person doesn't get used to it after a few days to a week, then you want to look at, do they have a histamine intolerance? So sometimes taking quercetin with it will help them with breaking down histamine. So people with histamine intolerance, vitamin C and quercetin tend to be really, really important. So yeah, I would look at that. I would just go teeny tiny doses. You just look a half a teaspoon, you know, get it up there really, really slowly. But if it consistently comes with the gas and bloating, then I would be looking at possibly a histamine reaction. Lana, if taking antimicrobial, I already got that one. And then Avis. Hey, Avis. Do you know anything about activation products, panacea oils? Are they a good source of healthy fats? Yeah. I don't think they're probably a good source of healthy fats. I think they're almost more like in essential oils, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, maybe, they have like a cumin oil and they have all kinds of those. And I think they're almost, I don't think they have essential fats like omega-3s, but I think that they're excellent products. I know the owner personally, and he's explained to me his process, and I keep trying to get a wholesale account so I can order a bunch of them at wholesale, and I haven't been able to do that yet, but I tasted some of them. He was at an event that I was at, and he brought me some to taste, and their oils taste amazing. They're so fresh, the cumin oil, the pecan oil, and all that. So are they a source of good, healthy fats? Sure, I think they're well-processed, so they're not going to be bad fats, but are they omega-3-type fats? Generally not, but they're excellent. I really can speak highly of them, at least for me. Aside from healing leaky gut, is there another way to improve, this is from Charlotte, improve iron and protein absorption in the body? For example, I've heard calcium and iron prevent iron absorption. Is this only with supplements? Yeah, you know, food comes as a package. So we don't ever get overabundance of certain nutrients when we're just eating whole fresh foods. So it's not so much that you need to worry about that. I would be concerned about all the interactions, and we're trying to put together a list of those, and it's really hard to keep them all straight. So iron gets better absorbed with vitamin C, right? Calcium. High levels of calcium, like in the supplementation when you're taking like 800 milligrams, can prevent iron absorption. And there's a whole bunch more. So generally the interference happens when there's high levels. And a lot of it just depends. You'd have to come into our NEPT program and do our 25-hour micronutrient module where we go into every single one of them and the interactions. And some of them it has to do with receptor competition. And sometimes it has to do with the carrier competition, and there's so many ways that they get in the way of each other. But yeah, improving iron absorption is via vitamin C and foods that are easy to break down. So I would say with iron, there's a supplement called Yellow Doc that helps with improving mineral absorption. It also helps with liver. Protein absorption, well, we have to make sure the stomach acid is appropriate and that there's enough digestive enzymes. And most people have low stomach acid. And so we're really working on that. We give you all the protocols for that in the first part of the program, you know, in terms of healing the gut mucosa, so things like demulsins, and then you want to look at things like bitters that can stimulate the digestion. I mean, there's so many things that can be done. And we talk about a lot of that in the program in there. Yeah, absolutely. And then just being careful about taking supplementation, high dose of one supplement without the balance of the other. It's the balance that the body is so striving for. It's great questions. Let's see. Can you get iron toxicity with long-term yellow dock usage? Probably if you take too much of it, like anything else. And I think monitoring is critical. Right, so if you started to take an iron supplement, I'd better believe I'd have you retesting your iron levels in 3 months, because you want to make sure yellow dot can bring it up. I have not seen anybody get long term toxicity with it, but it's certainly, you just monitor like anything else. Not, anything in excess, even water, can be toxic. Even water. Let's see who's on the chat. Oh, Lynn put up the panacea oil. What's the best protocol for healing the liver? There's a lot of protocols for healing the liver, Sequoia. It depends on what's going on with the liver, right? So if the person has got cirrhosis and they've got really high levels of all the liver enzymes, then they've got to heal it. They've got to, you know, that certainly goes back to the basics, right? And you know that better than anybody. It goes back to the basics of cleaning up, everyday detox, getting rid of the provocation. It depends on what's going on. If it's a cirrhosis, which is pretty severe, milk thistle has been really helpful for people with chronic liver stuff, with elevations of the enzymes, and brings it down. Antioxidants in general. But if you're looking at she says, if the liver is working at a low level function, you got to figure out why. Like everything else, it's figuring out why. Why is the liver functioning at a low level function? Is it that they're overexposed? Are they being exposed to unseen toxins like molds in the environment, which can be very dramatic? What else are they? Are they drinking alcohol? Right? Are they doing other things? Are they supporting themselves? Are they eating too much fat and causing it? So you really want to get at what's the cause of the low level function. And then I'd support the liver with various herbs, depending on the person, of course, but there's a lot of different herbs that can help support the liver and help it function better. You know, there's celandine and other kind of cholagogues, which you got to be careful about if there's a problem with fat digestion. They work really well. If there's stones building up, you know, there's things that you do to break down the stones. That's usually because it's sluggish, and that's doing cholagogues helps as well. Milk thistle, burdock root, dandelion, hawthorn berry, what's that other one? Not asparagus, but artichoke leaf. There's a lot of different herbal protocols. So it's a matter of like understanding, like when you say it's functioning at a low level, what does that mean? Like, do they have slightly increased enzymes? Do they have poor bile production? Is their bilirubin high? A lot of those things. Sequoia says, slightly elevated over their lifetime. I've identified it is gluten, and they have removed this otherwise clean diet. Okay. So when you say slightly elevated, do you mean that their enzymes, their liver enzymes? Then if you want to just look for something quick, I would look at milk thistle. Milk thistle has the most studies behind it in terms of lowering liver enzymes. And then, of course, all the lifestyle things. Is there any advice on how to tell what's causing acne breakouts aside from food intolerances and lab tests? And how would you know if it's from your digestion or liver not working properly or blood sugar spikes? It's not trial and error so much as it's sequentially looking at what are the stressors on the body. A lot of things can cause acne. It could be hormonal combined with bad food choices. It could be low levels of zinc. Lab testing isn't necessarily if you don't want to do lab testing, but I would be looking at what's the diet like, what are the stressors, what are the things that foods that harm and foods that heal, right? Look at foods that harm, foods that heal. Do they have dysbiosis, right? Do they have leaky gut? All of these things can cause it. So it's really, unless you want to do a whole bunch of lab testing, which would help you to identify some of those things, it's looking. You can do a straight old, you know, CBC plus blood chem, and tells you a lot about liver function, right? You can just do the digestive assessment that we've given you. We can get, you know, without, oh yeah, look at the assessment. What is it showing there? Is there low stomach acid? Is it look like there's some dysfunction with absorption? Okay. And Lynn mentions peony root is good for the liver too. Yeah. I would do labs, but don't know which ones I can get without a doctor. Where do you live, Charlotte? Because you generally can get all of them without a doctor. And we're going to go over that. Chicago easily. You can use Direct Labs to get whatever labs you want to get tested. You can get done through Direct Labs. You can get a stool analysis and see what's going on. Doctor's Data has one, and you can get it through Direct Labs, or you can get it on my site. Either way, if you go to our lab testing, I think it's just, it might be drreedamarie.com/lab testing will take you directly to that page. You can see a ton of tests that we make available just to people in our programs. We don't make that available to the public, but we make it available to just people in the programs. It's on a protected page. And make sure you log in before you do that. If you do drreedamarie.com/lab testing, you got to be logged in. But yeah, there's a lot of them. So what would you do? You have acne, you don't know if it's the liver. I would do CBC blood chem. And I would say do the stool testing if you want to get started that way. But really look at the basics too. I can't find a functional yeah. Well, Chicago has quite a number of functional doctors. But like I said, you don't necessarily need one in order to get the testing done. Lynn, in Chinese medicine, face diagnosis, acne presenting on the cheek area is related to functioning of the digestive system. Acne presenting on the forehead is an indication of liver. Well, that's kind of cool. That's good to know. That's very good to know. I love that. Let's see. Okay, a couple more. Let's see. Judy, should someone be concerned about a total cholesterol of 100, or does it just matter about the ratio of LDL to HDL? Well, you know, the biggest concern I would have, the red flag that raises to me, is a total cholesterol of 100 would say to me that I'd be concerned that they don't have enough cholesterol to make their hormones and make their myelin sheets. So I'd be looking at their hormones and say, do they have imbalances in estrogen, testosterone? Is their DHEA low and their cortisol possibly even higher? Their cortisol low even, and they're not producing enough to keep their adrenal function up. So that's the thing I would be looking at. I don't think the ratio matters all that much when it's only 100. The concern I have would be the deficit. Do they show neurological symptoms? Do they show signs of hormonal imbalance? So Tara, is the micronutrient module you mentioned available to those in the CMDS? So no, it's not. That's part of our nutritional endocrinology program. That is huge, big module. And we have 36 modules in our nutritional endocrinology. And one of them is micronutrients. One of them is macronutrients. We have history taking. We have lab testing, like really detailed analysis of blood chemistry. And CMDS is just one of the modules, one of the 36 modules that's in that two-year program. This is the digestive module in that program. Let's see. Tony, I posted this question to the chat. If CWP panel indicates the intestinal parasites is likely high, would it be okay to just do a general parasite cleanser or stool test? You know, I would say if the person's symptomatic and they have the high basophils or eosinophils, then I would certainly be fine doing a general parasite cleanse and see if it works. Something gentle, nothing severe, but you can really get a lot of help with doing some of the gentle herbs and, you know, of course, doing all the diet stuff and having the herbs to get rid of things and making sure you support the liver whenever you do it. So, you know, just a general parasite cleanse, like the one that we use from Scram is one. Yeah, any of those, and the one that the program that we put in this program you could do. I don't think you always have to do stool tests because, first of all, it's expensive. Second of all, it's not fun for people. And if they're willing to say, look, I want to do this, unless you see it being serious, like they've been trying, they've done various parasite cleanses, then you'd want to do a stool test to find out specifically what bugs are we dealing with here, right? Like a general parasite cleanse doesn't get rid of it. You're like, okay, what bugs are we dealing with? And it might be a bacterial overgrowth. It could be a parasite that is not sensitive to the general herbs, because what we do when we do a stool test, the stool test will show here's the bugs that are growing and here are the herbs or the pharmaceuticals that will help to get rid of them. And what I find is some of the general parasite cleanse herbs end up being in there. And it could be that the person took them for too long or they were taking them prophylactically or whatever, and the bugs got resistant, or it just could be the particular parasites or bacteria or whatever else they have growing there. So that's a really good question. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of when somebody comes in my office and they have been on kind of a standard American diet or a standard healthy American diet, or, you know, that kind of think they're healthy, but they're not as much because they're eating honey instead of sugar and they're doing whole wheat bread instead of white bread. And they have issues. I'm oftentimes a big fan of doing minimal testing. I do like to do a baseline CBC and blood chem to see where they're at and make sure I rule out anything serious, and I could send them off to somebody that, you know, they're back to their doctor, their main doctor. But what I would say is that I like to do the, I like to reserve the testing for when I'm not getting anywhere. So you work the foundations, you work and work and work the foundations, you get the digestion in order all the ways that we're teaching you. You get them on a good clean diet, you get them off the foods that hurt. And then you go back and then you can see what's left. And oftentimes they get dramatically better, but maybe they plateau. And then you want to see why that plateau, then the stool test is very useful. If you have someone with unlimited funds, they come in and say, hey, you know, they're the, you know, the president of the bank and they make tons of money and they just want to get all the testing done. Great. Get all the testing done up front. You know, get it done, and then you can do whatever, and then you can do baselines, and it's very scientific that way. But most people don't have a lot of that disposable income to spend on tests. And if you're working with somebody and they're clearly on a diet and a lifestyle and a stress level that's not supporting them, and if you can get them to make those basic changes, it's the 80-20 rule. You can get 80% better. And then you could start testing if they don't go all the way to the 100 or 95 or wherever you expect them to be able to get to. That's my rule of thumb. But if somebody comes in and they said, I've been doing this for years, I've been, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, off all my allergens, off of all sugar, I'm eating, you know, only organic foods or mostly organic foods, I'm drinking half my body weight in fluid ounces of water every day, and I'm getting a wide range, and I do these liver cleanses, and I've done a bunch of gut cleanses, and I don't know what's wrong. That's when the testing comes in handy, right? And there are a lot of people out there like that, and that's where the testing comes in handy. Good question, Tony. I didn't see it on the chat, though. What's the best lab to use for fatty acids? I usually use Genova Metametrics, and I usually do the blood spot fatty acid because they can do it at home. They can just prick their finger and then send it in as opposed to having to go for a blood draw. That's my favorite. There's others that do it. Okay, let's see. Drina. Okay, Charlotte. Sorry, last question. You got a lot of questions. How do you feel about food combining meat with grain? I thought this wasn't best. Is this correct? I generally don't do meat with grain. I don't believe that meat and carbohydrate will absorb real well. So if you're going to be eating meat, you're going to eat meat and veggies at one meal, grain and veggies at another meal. That's the way I do it. Yep, that's what I recommend. Yep. And it's not so good for blood sugar balance and insulin, and we could talk about that more at another point in time. And we do that in our insulin program. Okay, chat. Let's see. Oh, Daniela, how do you know if cold-pressed olive oil is really all olive oil? You know, there's been a lot of talk about that. It may not be. I mean, it's really a matter of finding people you can trust and doing it, but you don't know. I mean, you really don't. Okay, so here's one. Should HCL and pepsin supplements be avoided for confirmed autoimmune gastritis? Yes, I would definitely avoid that. The first step with that is you're gonna soothe and heal. That's the first step. So you want to do mucilaginous stuff, whatever they can tolerate in terms of healing. DGL has been found to be extremely helpful in that, even all the way in with ulcers. So you get them on a protocol for that. You get them soothed down. Then you're looking at most people with gastritis have, most people with autoimmune systems have symptoms have a leaky gut. If you want to look at leaky gut, you want to look at all the other protocols that we're teaching through here, but the starting point would be calm it all down, soothe it down, and do not use HPL or pepsin. Pepsin is a type of protein. Remember I said earlier, don't use that with gastritis, and definitely not HPL. Oh, Lynn found a spot. You can send, oops, I'm going back up. I missed some of these before. They scroll fast. Let's see. She said there's a link in the chat. If you scroll up, olivecenter.ucdavis.edu/services, you can send a sample of it there to test. Wow. Claudia, I hear Dr. L talk about the same thing she did prior. Not sure what you mean by that, Claudia. Denise. Do you hear background? Oh, if you're hearing that, you may hear an echo. Maybe you have me on the phone as well as you have me on the chat, the web. So you need to turn that off. There's background noise downstairs, but I have my mic on my headset mic, so you shouldn't be hearing background noise. It may be that somebody's, that you're, have the line open. Somebody has the line open? I don't know. Okay, I'm going back. All right. Denise, my 90-year-old has circulation problem and feet are swollen and very hard. He has a problem walking, no diabetes. Oops, I keep having to move it because it goes every time somebody types in a question. Okay, let me go back and find that again. There we go. He has a problem walking, no diabetes, no hypertension. The doctor recommended compression socks, but it's not working. Any recommendations? You know, again, we always want to go deep. I don't have a full history onto what might be causing it. With circulation problems, it could be a kidney issue. It could be a heart issue. It could be a liver issue. It could be ascites and something like that. So without knowing all his other symptoms and stuff, the compression socks are not working. It's clearly not getting at what their cause is. The compression socks are just going to push the fluid back up. I mean, he can be laying on his back and putting his legs up at a 45-degree angle and doing the up and back and forth. Have you checked his blood pressure? I'm assuming his doctor's checked his blood pressure. Is his blood pressure high? Is he on any medications? Could it be a side effect of medication? So there's a lot of things here. You're my 90-year-old dad, yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot. I mean, it's really a matter of doing a thorough history. Okay, so then I got those. There's yours. Okay. Charlotte, I got that one. Chinese medicine. Oh, is hair analysis on a person who only uses shampoo and no other products reliable and not need SpectraCell? SpectraCell and hair analysis are totally different. SpectraCell goes into the white blood cells and it checks the levels of the nutrients in the cells itself. It tests minerals and vitamins. Hair will just talk minerals. And there's controversy as to how accurate it is for testing levels of specific minerals and whether they're high or not. It's very good for most heavy metals, not all, but it's definitely not, I wouldn't even compare it to SpectraCell. Lynn, can you post a link? So I think it was Celadon for liver, but not, yeah, Celadon, Celandine, you can get it at Mountain Rose and, you know, in an herb and make it a tea, but it's very, you got to be careful with it and just don't overdo it and use it and really read the contraindications because it's not something you take long-term or large. It's just something you take short-term to help move the bile through. Yeah, so that's what Tony was saying. Yes, expensive inconvenience versus cleanse. I was definitely worried about that, hoping the general cleanse will do it and balancing intestinal flora. Yeah, and if you work on all of it, not just the getting rid of the bugs, but like making an inhospitable environment. Yeah, and the self-assessment again in 30 days is good. My bilirubin levels are sometimes off, Claudia says. I've been told that I can't do much about it. I doubt it. Go back to the basics. Yeah, I would say it's definitely bilirubin levels that are consistently elevated marginally above normal is a condition called Gilbert's. And there isn't often a lot you can do about it, but it's oftentimes it's liver congestion that will cause the bilirubin to be high. Unless there's something causing you to break down more red blood cells, because bilirubin is a byproduct of the spleen breaking down used up red blood cells. And if they're high, you know, it could be damage to the spleen or imbalance to the spleen, but most likely it's related to the liver and moving it through. Everything starts with the basics. I hate to be a broken record. People want the fancy herb, the fancy test, the fancy this or that, and they want to keep doing their lifestyle habits and eating foods that are not compatible with good health either for everyone or for them in specific. So if you've got somebody and you want to solve their acne problem and you tell me that you want to know what they can do for acne, I'm going to ask you, what are they eating? What are they drinking? What's their stress level like? You want to look at stomach acid because stomach acid is critical for mineral absorption. So if you're somebody that you think has various mineral absorption problems, say they have osteoporosis, say they have acne, you know, say they have brittle nails, you want to solve the low stomach acid problem. And if you can't start with the low stomach acid problem because they've got gastritis or they've got reflux, you've got to start with those other things. And it's all laid out for you. And that's why I go sequentially in the program. I start with the head because the stress level is huge. Somebody's under a lot of stress, their digestion is going to be bad. It's just going to be bad because it's natural response, right? And Lynn says, I think people should do a parasite cleanse at least once a year anyway. It's a great idea. Not all of us do it. I haven't done one in a little while, but. And Claudia said, I heard that it's best to get rid of parasites around a full moon when they're most active. Dr. Ann Louise Gittleman. Yeah, I definitely have heard that. And, you know, they also are most active during the night. So taking some of the antiparasitic herbs at bedtime is actually a good idea. I'm doing a liver cleanse now, right in alignment with the last new moon. It was actually a full moon. I heard the same things twice. Denise says the doctor believes it could be kidney disease, and that's one of the things that I mentioned. Yeah. Yeah. So kidney function tests, you know, GFR, glomerular filtration rate, look at creatinine, look at BUN, look at uric acid. You want to look at some of those things. And then, you know, if they're concerned, they should do an ultrasound of his kidney and see if it's overgrown, if it has some kind of a cyst or tumor on it. Lynn says stress can trigger symptoms of Gilbert's. Yes. Managing stress with relaxation techniques. Yes. Back to basics, right? I know. It's like, it's like the basics. Nobody wants to hear it. They want the fancy cures because they're used to a medical system where it's symptoms, diagnosis, cure, symptoms, diagnosis, cure. And that's not what the way it works in functional medicine. That's not what it works in root cause healthcare. You have the power to get to the root and just don't be impatient with it. When you go through the process, go through it on yourself, do all the assessments on yourself, go through all the protocols and the different modules on yourself. Get the testing done on yourself, even if you don't think you have a problem at least, or get it on somebody, you know, as close to you that you do, so you can go through the process. But start with the basics. There's so many people who tell me about, how do I get rid of this, you know, specific thing? And I go, okay, let me ask what you're eating. And I find out they're eating white bread and sugar and cheese and, you know, all kinds of hydrogenated stuff. And it doesn't work. I met someone at a conference, and the conference was for health practitioners, not healthcare practitioners, people who are concerned, who were interested in health. It was a health conference, and it was all, you know, clean food and the whole bit. And I got to do a talk at this conference. It was more of like a retreat. So I got to do a talk, and this person came up to me, oh, it's such a great talk. It was about hormones. And she says, I'd love, like, what can I do for my hormones? I have this worse PMS. So I looked at her and I said, oh, okay, well, I'm just assuming, because she was there, right? I'm assuming that you are already doing, and I mentioned some of the basics. She goes, no, I eat gluten all the time, I eat bread all the time, I eat cheese. You mean I have to give up my bread and cheese? Well, it turns out somebody had dragged her along to this event, so she wasn't up to speed on what most people there believed in and were doing. So I'm like, she goes, I have to get rid of it. And I just looked her in the eye and I said, which would you prefer? Would you prefer to have miserable, horrible, painful periods, which will lead to a miserable, horrible, painful menopause, and get to eat bread and cheese? Or would you prefer to give up the bread and cheese and other indulgent foods and feel great all the time? And she looked at me in the eye and she said, I want to feel great all the time and I want to still be able to eat bread and cheese. That's not somebody I want to work with. Because she's trying to find the magic cure. She wanted to find the magic herb that was going to cure her, that I had it because I did things naturally. And that's what we're up against, right? They've been brainwashed. And it's getting better. And there's a lot of them who do what they do because they just don't know. And you don't want to get them in there and say, oh, let's do a parasite cleanse before you've worked on the basics. And I know I'm not saying that about Tony because I know Tony definitely works on the basics first. That's her big stick, even before she met me and came into our NEPT program. I don't see any other questions in the chat, but Lynn, if there are any others, would you just retype them or type them into the Q&A part? Because I'm not seeing any more, but they might have flown by me. I'm going to redo the Q&A. Okay, so then, Avis, what is a good product source of DGL? You know, that's a good question. I like the powdered one from Thorn or Pure Encapsulation, and I like powdered DGL because it helps especially when people have reflux and they have esophagitis. It helps because you can drink it down, and especially if you drink it with slippery elm, so it goes down slowly because it's mucilaginous, and it actually gets to be coating the cells there and then comes and sits in the stomach. And we don't have to add to the stress of your stomach having to do work and take it out of a capsule. I think tinctures, I have not seen a tincture, but that doesn't work real well. Lozenges, there are some companies, and I don't know off the top of my head which ones there are. You just look for purity, but lozenges can be dramatically helpful for people who have reflux. And some people with reflux, it's not just up into their chest, right, into their esophagus. They feel it in their throat. And there's some people who don't feel anything in their gut. They just have this nagging sore throat that won't go away. A lot of times it's the reflux. And so when you start having somebody like that who has the symptoms higher up, sucking on a DGL lozenge, and maybe Lynn can look up to see if there's any particular DGL lozenges that we'd like. But I know that the one I've used most is Thorn and Pure Encapsulations for the powdered DGL. Okay, that's it there. I'm going to go to chat. Yeah, Lynn, if you can find something, I know they have them at a lot of the health food stores. And, you know, sometimes you may not get the lozenge may not be like perfect purity like some of these high-level companies, but sometimes it doesn't matter if you've got some magsterate or something because you are melting it in your mouth. She just found one. Vital Nutrients, Nutritional Support Intestinal. Let's see. That's DGL powder. But what about DGL lozenge? Let me see. DGLLOSENGE. Now has a DGL lozenge. Let's see what's in Now's. Probably can get that in any health food store. I just look at the ingredients and say, what's in this thing? So I'm going to look at the product label, and it's got xylitol and sorbitol. Sorbitol might cause a little gut distress, so you have to be careful with that. And everything else is just DGL, glycine, and stevia, and that's in their capsules, in their lozenge. So that would be fine as long as somebody isn't experiencing a lot of gas and bloating because it could aggravate with the sorbitol. Enzymatic has a DGL with no sugar or fructose. Let's see what's in theirs. I'm looking at... It doesn't say let's see. Okay, other ingredients, sorbitol, mannitol, aniseed, powder, stearic acid. So I wouldn't do that one. So far Now is the winner on the lozenges. And that's the only one I see on Amazon. There may be others. But yeah. And the other thing is, if you can't find a good lozenge that you feel comfortable with, that, you know, somebody's sensitive to the xylitol in there, what you can do is you can get the DGL powder, and then you can mix it up with some coconut oil, and you can put in, I would say coconut oil, maybe a little bit of chia gel that's been ground, where the chia has been ground down, and then mix it together with the DGL and then freeze it in little, like those little candy tray things, or just with the DGL, the licorice, the coconut. I'm just thinking the coconut might melt faster than you'd like, once it goes into the body, but that could be a possibility, is to just, put that in the mouth and just let it slowly soothe down. You might even, maybe with like an ice cube, if people can tolerate that, because that would last a little longer, just kind of mix the DGL in water. Mix the DGL in water or something, coconut or something like that, and you can make your own. I haven't done this. I'm just making it up on the fly, but I can't imagine why it wouldn't work pretty well if you're not comfortable with those lozenges. Yeah, any other ideas? Anybody on there that is good at making lozenges for something, that you might look on one of the sites, herbal pharmacy kind of sites where they'll teach you how to do that. Yeah, so Lynn put the link up to the DGL. My favorite bitters is Herbalist and Alchemist. There are others. Gaia Herbs makes them as well, but I just like the formulation in Herbalist and Alchemist. It's really well thought through. Okay, let's see. All right. Judy, Wise Women Herbals makes a solid extract. The only other, yeah, but it's licorice solid extract. It's not DGL. So that could be awesome, and I know it's delicious. But if somebody has high blood pressure, you want to be super, super careful, or a tendency towards it. Because when you're taking the licorice for digestive stuff, you're taking a fair amount, and you just want to make sure, be careful about recommending licorice without, unless you ask about the blood pressure and have them monitor it. But that's good. That's a good question. DGL transdermal cream, what good does that do? Why would a transdermal cream of DGL be any good? Because you're looking at healing your gut. You're not looking at processed root. I'm looking at it. Not sure about that. That's not making much sense to me, but anyway, I want it to be in contact with the lining. Use alpha lipoic acid transdermal. Anything you can use transdermal can be really effective, and it bypasses the gut stuff, and you can bypass and overcome a lot of the deficiencies while you're building up your gut. I would try the Herbalist and Alchemist. It could be the combination there. If you're getting, Claudia said she gets burping from the bitters. Urban Moonshine. Oh, that's the one. Lynn likes Urban Moonshine, so that's a good one to try too. Herbalist and Alchemist. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let me see if there's any other questions typed in here. None there. And let's see if anybody has their hand up. No hands. Last chance for hands. Star 2. Last chance to have your voice heard. No? All right. One more time, I'll refresh the chat, the Q&A, and then I'll go back to chat, and I think then we're good. Great. Thank you for sharing, because any resources that you have, share, please. If you have good sources of powdered or liquid nutrients, awesome, because that's something that I really encourage people to use more of, as powder and liquid, except in like the case where we were just talking about the lozenge, just because you want it in the throat. And then anything transdermal is awesome. Urban Moonshine was up a little higher, Claudia. Lynn wrote www.urbanmoonshine.com, and they have a good DGL. Not a DGL, bitters. They have a good bitters. Okay, I'm going to look at this Chandika. I'll look at it. It looks like a new site, but I'm just not sure about a transdermal licorice. That's the only thing. All right. Last chance. Okay, I'm going to open up your lines. You can say goodbye. I'm going to stop the recording, and we'll say goodbye. Bye-bye, everybody. Great to hear. Well, I didn't hear from any of you, but great to have you on. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Welcome.
Bye. Bye, thanks.
Bye, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.